This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Arbella Studios' Emmanuel, the untold true story of hope and forgiveness in the wake of the Charleston church shooting tragedy. Emmanuel, in theaters June 17th and 19th only. More information is available at emmanuelmovie.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Early in the morning of June 28, 1969, police raided the Stonewall Inn, a Greenwich Village bar that had become a staple of New York City's underground gay community. But this time, tired of the ongoing raids, community members fought back, striking what would become known as the Stonewall Riots. Now, those words I just spoke there are not from me, but from the website of World Pride NYC, as it prepares to, in its words, honor and celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising next week, a special event during this year's so-called Pride Month. Well, you might recall that in 2016, then-President Obama even designated a new national monument at the site of the Stonewall Uprising, a Stonewall National Monument, as a tribute to the modern radical homosexual movement in the United States. But there are a few very important questions that we have to ask here. Number one, are the activists really telling the whole truth about the Stonewall Riots? And even more importantly, how did we get from that event to today, when courts have redefined marriage and are now declaring people to be non-binary, drag queens are reading pro-homosexual literature to toddlers in public libraries, and TV networks are increasingly showing homosexual characters on children's shows? Well, we're going to do a little history today on the Stonewall Riots and what came after them, as homosexual activists once again spin the truth to convince Americans that event was basically just like Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat on the bus. Peter LaBarbera is joining us, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. Peter, as always, wonderful to have you with us. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Janet. Thanks for the opportunity.
Are homosexual activists giving us the truth about the Stonewall Riots? This is an event with which you're very familiar.
Well, of course not. This was not Selma, that's for sure. This was a seedy, mafia-controlled bar, secret gay bar. By the way, there were lots of mafia-owned gay bars back then, something most people don't know. But this actual, quote, rebellion was actually a very nasty police riot, Janet, in which, cops were hurt. There were bricks thrown at cops, and there was even an attempt to light cops on fire who were trapped inside the bar, barricaded against these terrible riots. So, is that something that we should emulate? Is that anything, it's appropriate that this symbol of the gay revolution is, of course, itself twisted and was actually a nasty anti-cop riot.
Well, this is what's so left out of the story, because the way you hear the activists tell it, what happened was the police were always coming after this innocent community. They just wanted to love whom they wanted to love. They wanted to be themselves in these areas where they were, the Stonewall Inn being one of them. And the police, those nasty homophobic police, came in, and finally these victims had had enough. And the only reason that they had this uprising, Peter, was because they were being persecuted. Now, how would you correct that story if you were to retell it the way it really was?
Well, I think we have to have context. This was a mafia-owned bar, and so there were police payoffs. So there were corrupt cops. There was, it's not like the police were all good, of course, and because they were being paid off. And the mafia just, chose to make money from homosexuals back then in New York, which is heavily homosexual then. It's more so today. But, they've sanitized it, Janet. And this was a bar that was frequented by drag queens, which is ironic because there was a whole time when the homosexual movement tried to distance itself from, the more radical drag queen element. But here we are back again today with Drag Queen Story Hour and the kids.
Yeah.
There were homosexual hustlers. They were underage hustlers. In other words, boys who were selling sex to older men, older perverted men. I mean, this was a very seedy establishment, and it just is horrible what Obama did, because he elevated it. And by the way, Janet, I think today, now I may be wrong, but it may not be the most pornographic, but I'll bet it is the most pornographic historic site in the U.S. because it still has these edgy gay performances at the bar now, the Stonewall Bar of today, which has been designated this historic site, is itself a pornographic establishment.
Goodness. Well, I know there was this book back in 1993 called Stonewall by this pro-homosexual writer, Martin Duberman. Is that his name? Martin Duberman?
Yeah, Duberman.
Yeah. And he revealed, according to one story I read, how, as you mentioned, middle-aged men cruised in Stonewall looking for underage male prostitutes. Another homosexual activist says Stonewall was a real dive, an awful sleazy place set up by the mob for hustlers and chickens to be bought by older people. Yeah.
Well, again, context. And this is something, you know, all the kids are going to be learning about, quote, gay history. They just passed a law in Illinois. The Democratic governor signed it into law, which is going to mandate gay historical figures are taught. But they're not going to learn real gay history. This phenomenon of chicken hawks and chicken, I know we're a family show, so I have to be careful, but this was part and parcel of the quote-unquote gay world back in the 70s in San Francisco. They had a chicken hawks and chicken being underage boys, a lot of them hustlers, and the chicken hawk was the adult male predator who wanted sex with the boys. In fact, I read in a gay slang book about gay slang called Gay Talk, Janet, they quote defined chicken dinner as, quote, sex with a teenage boy. So this was the result. And remember that NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association, the notorious pedophile organization, marched in at least a couple early gay pride parades until they were booted out by the homosexual movement that knew that this was bad PR.
Incredible. And I was reading one piece, as you mentioned before, this crime family, the Genovese crime family, actually owned the Stonewall Inn at the time. As you mentioned, a lot of these gay bars were owned by the mob. But you look at the actual crimes that took place. They arrested, as I understand, 13 people, some for violating the statute on inappropriate gender apparel. This is from the site Mental Floss, which wrote about this. After some patrons and local residents witnessed an officer striking a prisoner on the head, they began lashing out with anything within arm's reach, including bottles, stones, and loose change. A number of people even wrestled a parking meter from the ground and tried to use it as a battering ram. And as you mentioned before, there were some even attempting to set the property on fire. And wasn't it the case, too, that they almost set some cops on fire? I think you alluded to that a few minutes ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, according to the Duberman book, somebody squirted lighter fluid inside. The cops were barricaded in this because the riot was gaining steam. The cops were barricaded inside, and somebody squirted lighter fluid in, and then later threw a match in, and then there was some more cops came to break it up. But cops could have been burned alive in this quote unquote historic, you know, this, you know, they try to make it sound romantic. Oh, the rebellion. Look, it was a riot at a seedy gay bar, and they even threw feces at cops, bricks from a nearby construction site. Cop cars were destroyed. Now, I'm not exonerating all the cops. I'm sure a lot of the cops also behaved badly, and there was a lot of corruption back then. But the main point here is this was a leftist event. It was nothing to be, and the whole thing, it's celebrated, you know, homosexuality. This does not belong in the noble civil rights movement's history, but that's what is going to be taught to the kids.
Well, and the irony here is you've seen the gay rights movement constantly try to compare itself to the civil rights movement. And as some of our wonderful Christian brothers in the black community have pointed out, don't equate your sin with my skin. But the other distinction between the civil rights movement and Stonewall was the violence and lack thereof. When you look back at the civil rights movement, Rosa Parks didn't pour lighter fluid on the white people on the bus. She just said, I'm not giving up my seat. That was part and parcel of, you know, the nonviolent aspect of the civil rights movement. So there's another point at which you have to say those two movements are not the same.
Yes, Martin Luther King advocated nonviolence, of course. and remember that, you know, this was not the, this was, I call it the beginning of the in-your-face gay revolution. There was previous homosexual activism, but even that was started by Harry Hay, who himself was a communist.
Well, I want to come back to that, Peter. Hang on just a moment. We're going to come back with Peter LaBarbera talking about the Stonewall riots and the history 50 years hence. We'll come back on Janet Meffer Today after this. Socialism is being purposely dressed up in Christian choir robes by once trusted and very influential church leaders. Their gatherings are growing in numbers as they shelve the true gospel and replace it with a false one known as the social gospel. What is this agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world? And whatever happened to powerful biblical Christianity? Noted producers Judd Saul, Trevor Loudon, Curtis Bowers, and Pastor Kerry Gordon of Cornerstone Church have joined forces to create enemies within the church, a hard-hitting international documentary that will reveal the plans and the players behind this movement and shine a bright light of restoration and hope upon Christ's church. We encourage you to partner with enemies within the church and help them complete this important project. To learn how to help and to stay updated about the film, go to enemieswithinthechurch.com. And while you're there, be sure to enjoy a sneak peek of the movie. Go now to enemieswithinthechurch.com. That's enemieswithinthechurch.com. enemieswithinthechurch.com. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Just one example of a mom who came in, was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed, for her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for five young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY, 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. It's interesting to me how many people I think are really getting tired of Pride Month. Every single June, it's just a sea of rainbow flags everywhere you turn, in the media and social media and TV and corporate logos and so forth. But we have to go back to a really seminal event in the history of gay rights, so-called, and that is the event known as the Stonewall Riots. It occurred on June 28th in 1969 at the Stonewall Inn, a Greenwich Village bar that had become a staple of New York City's underground gay community. Unfortunately, the story that they tell doesn't have all the good parts. And Peter LaBarbera from Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is here telling us the truth about Stonewall. And also, we're going to talk a little bit about how Stonewall led us to where we are today. One of the things that you mentioned before we were going into the break there, Peter, was Harry Hay. Now, Harry Hay was a very early on gay rights activist. But it's kind of interesting. Our friend Cliff Kincaid over at Accuracy in Media had said, well, wait a minute, if we're going to celebrate the Stonewall Inn, why don't we celebrate Harry Hay? I mean, Harry Hay signed a statement about Stonewall and was all for Stonewall. And, you know, why not give some credit where credit is due to Harry Hay, who was an early guy. He was a communist, as you mentioned. And didn't he have the Queer Fairies group? And I mean, why not honor him as well?
Janet, I mean, Harry Hay is really the founder of modern, quote unquote, gay rights, because he came up with the idea of homosexuals as a minority.
Yes.
And basically, you know, launched the gay movement. And, you know, let's also not forget Alfred Kinsey, the now we know perverted homosexual, quote unquote, scientist. This is all lies. Notice how everything's built on lies. Kinsey sold the idea that there was this enormous percentage of the American population that was homosexual, which also turned out to be a lie. But he was the... He really created the idea that, wow, there was this big minority. Well, it turns out he was lying. And, you know, I'm afraid that these lies are being inculcated in generations upon generations of American students who are only going to be taught the fake news, as Trump would say. Another one is who's the former mayor of the supervisor in San Francisco? Harvey Milk.
Mm-hmm.
There was a movie made about him. Well, Harvey Milk himself in his 30s had a sexual relationship, so-called, with a 16 or 17-year-old boy
right.
who was a street hustler,
right.
A male prostitute. And Harvey Milk is being lauded as a civil rights hero. Where does it end?
Well, that's the question. And again, Cliff Kincaid has written that a Spirit of Stonewall proclamation was issued back in 1994, arguing that man-boy love had to be recognized as an important part of homosexual history and conduct. And he points out that Harry Hay was one of the signers. So, you know, here yeah. we go. This is the stuff that probably those California school children will not get when they're hearing about their gay heroes, or in Illinois from the textbooks that the teachers are using. The stuff that really they don't want advertised is basically never brought up.
Right. And also this move, here's another one. This movement launched the acceptance of perversion, which gave the green light for people to behave perversely, which ultimately contributed to the plague of AIDS. Hundreds of thousands of men practicing homosexuality died prematurely. Are they going to learn that and the link of that to the modern gay movement?
It was
terrible.
I don't
think they're going to learn that in schools.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yet here, as I mentioned before, President Obama creates this monument, this national monument, as part of the National Park Service to honor Stonewall. And from his second inauguration in 2013, this was the quote from President Obama: "We the people declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still, just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall." I mean,
well,
what is that about?
Yeah, and the implication there is that God created people homosexual, and that's false. And Obama, more and more lies. Obama himself, his new biographer, David Garrow, reported, Obama considered gayness himself as a lifestyle, and he said it's decided against it. So, you know, Obama was obsessed with this issue. And it's very sad because he did a lot of damage, including, especially, of course, the onslaught of legalized homosexual marriage to the Supreme Court in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, it's just staggering what that man did when he was in office. Now, what was interesting to me, Peter, I don't know if you had come across this story, but I was reading a story on the Huffington Post about the new owners of the Stonewall Inn. And one of those owners, a woman by the name of Stacey Lentz, had this quote describing Stonewall: "I would say it is a gay church. And her co-owner basically made the same remark, that it is basically a church. And I thought, well, that's an interesting choice of words, but is it really that far off the money? Because more and more I'm hearing Christians make the observation that, boy, this whole Pride Month, it sure seems like this is some major religion. That's how they're treating it now.
Yeah. I prefer the word cult.
Yeah. Well, right.
I think the LGBTQ cult, and the Q stands for queer, is really what it is, because, you know, it has all the attributes, or at least many of the attributes of cults. For example, its own fictional history, the idea that, I mean, look at the animosity, the sheer hatred for ex-gays.
Yes.
People who've left homosexuality and transgenderism behind. And there's so many of these people, and God continues to draw people out of homosexuality, out of transgenderism. But the movement, the gay so-called movement, hates these people, but not only hates them, tries to erase them and dehumanize them. The very thing they campaigned against, remember, the early gay activists were all about visibility. We have to be visible.
Right.
So then we get our rights, gay power and all this. They're doing the exact opposite to ex-gays, because they know that ex-gays destroy the foundation of this movement, because the whole foundation is, it's who you are. It's basically, you're born that way. It defines you as a person. It's God made you that way, essentially. But the ex-gays show very clearly that you can walk away from this lifestyle like any other sin.
Well, and isn't it ironic, as you mentioned, President Obama considering being gay? I mean, doesn't that in itself destroy their narrative? How could you consider being gay? You're either born gay or you're not, despite the lack of scientific evidence for such. I mean, just by saying I was considering it, you're talking about the possibility of fluidity. You know, they say fluidity is all over the place, except if you want to go from gay to straight. That's impossible.
Right.
Yeah.
fluidity, yeah, gender, they're all over fluidity. They celebrate it. You could be pansexual one day, bi curious the next. You know,
sounds exhausting, doesn't it?
Oh my, the whole thing is so complicated.
It really is. It really is.
Terrible.
Yeah. Let me read you another quote here, because I had mentioned before this co-owner of the current Stonewall Inn talked about it as a church, but I want to read a quote from the other co-owner. His name is Kurt Kelly. Listen to this quote, Peter. It is the church. This is the melting pot. This is where you can come and feel safe. This is a part of the National Monument. This is where it all began. I mean, seriously, this is where it all began in 1969. They fought back for your gay freedom today, if that's the right word. Gay freedom, freedom to be gay, to love whoever you want to love. When you see that old man walking down the street in hot pants, he wasn't allowed to do that 50 years ago. Good for him. Don't make fun of him. Appreciate where he came from. Are you serious? We're supposed to appreciate old men walking down the street in hot pants. That's the legacy of Stonewall, I guess.
Yeah, I think the legacy of Stonewall is the war on normal. And it's also the war on God. And in that sense, it is. It's an anti-God cult in the sense that they celebrate rebellion, and yet but it's beyond that. They attribute their whole humanity, their identity to deviance. Hmm. I mean, and I think for the larger culture, for people who are, I guess I would say, to put it simply, against God's created order, they love this because it is sort of symbolic of the rebellion of humankind against God.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you see straights almost, they themselves have become fanatically obsessed. So many people, you read about people who once identified as Christian who said, I cannot identify as Christian because God is a homophobe if you read the Bible. They literally use this to define their resistance to God. They cannot accept a godly created order that does not include homosexuality.
Which makes them God in their own minds. They are the final arbiters of truth. They will be the judges over God. And yet how terrifying to consider what the Bible says about it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. That's the truth.
Absolutely. And I think it's very frightening that so many people who would not call themselves gay identify, they get their goodness, as it were, out of identifying with this sex. I've always called the LGBT movement a sin movement, because I believe that's what it is. It's a movement that glorifies a particular sin. You don't see adultery pride parades. Why
right.
not, Janet?
Right.
There's plenty of adultery in the world, but you don't see adultery pride. So this takes it a step further. But when you see straights identifying like this, it's sort of like they're using it to basically say, okay, God, I'm with these guys. I don't care what the Bible says. I'm with these guys, and you see now they basically proclaim themselves moral, and they proclaim anybody who disagrees, they demonize and say, you're hateful. And so this movement is really in the vanguard, I think, of anti-Christianity. The LGBTQ movement is in the vanguard of a growing anti-Christian sentiment and movement in this country, which is really changing America in a very bad way.
Well, and there's a whole line of things I want to go into on that score, because you're absolutely right. The anti-Christian rise in America right now, they're right in the middle of it all. And you're totally right about that. What's interesting, though, what strikes me is when I look at the Stonewall riots and I look at how gay activists act today, it seems to me that the overwhelming emotion coming from this community is anger. And it goes all the way back, it seems, to the Stonewall riots. Just anger. Yes, the rebellion. Yes, the anti-God impetus. But anger, 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 anger. It's present today. And it's just interesting that more people don't notice that or comment upon it. That why are these people constantly so angry?
Yeah, because I think they're angry because they're trying to justify to themselves and others the unjustifiable. You cannot rationalize in a Christian world rallying, celebrating, declaring pride in your sin. Everybody has sin issues, but this one's public, and they celebrate the sin publicly to justify their own behavior.
Hang on, Peter, we're going to take another break. Peter LaBarber with us talking about the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. We'll come back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Arbella Studios' Emmanuel, the untold true story of hope and forgiveness in the wake of the Charleston church shooting tragedy. Emmanuel, in theaters June 17th and 19th only. More information is available at emmanuelmovie.com. We're back on Janet Meffer today. Thanks for joining us. Peter LaBarber, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, is joining me too. We're talking a little bit about this month, Pride Month. The difference this year is it's the 50th anniversary on June 28th of the Stonewall riots, going back to this gay bar in 1969 where there was an uprising and people got arrested and cops got hurt, and it could have gone way worse than it really was. But, you know, we were talking a little bit, Peter, before we went to the break about the anger. And you were rightly saying, I think, that this is a community, unfortunately, that is angry, probably because they are trying to justify the unjustifiable. And this sin movement is something that they're trying to, you know, force upon everybody. Now, I want to talk about Stonewall, though, as a starting point for the so-called gay rights movement, which you know so much about. But how do you see Stonewall as leading the country down this path that has led us to the Obergefell decision and Christians being persecuted and sued in court? I know Jack Phillips was recently sued for the third time over his reluctance and refusal to compromise his faith in Jesus Christ and submit his gifts and talents toward creating, you know, cakes that are evil or participating in an evil union. But how do you see this, though, in the broader context of the gay rights movement and its successes over the year?
Because this sparked the defiance, Janet, the defiant gay movement, and it sparked the in-your-face aggressive gay movement. There were homosexual protests led by a guy named Frank Kameny, who would do a silent sign protest outside in Philadelphia every year. But this was defiance, and then it really accelerated pride, and that led to this very aggressive gay movement, which frankly intimidated people, and it ended up beating people. Within a few short years, they had overturned the American Psychiatric Association's definition of homosexuality in the DSM, which is sort of like the Bible for psychiatrists.
Right.
They said homosexuality was a mental disorder, but this movement sparked the defiant gay in-your-face activism, which pressured the APA to changing that. It wasn't a scientific decision that said, oh, you know, it wasn't like scientists all of a sudden in 1973, the psychiatrist said, you know, we think homosexuality's not a mental disorder anymore. No, it was a highly organized pressure campaign from the inside and from the outside. You had people doing, secret homosexuals within the APA doing pressure. You had activists working with, you know, gay activist groups working within to divert polls that were reflected the actual sentiment of psychiatrists. This was a highly organized, very aggressive pressure campaign, which won. And that was just one of their wins. As we know, over the years, they got bolder and bolder. They got bigger and bigger, stronger, more money. And they just started intimidating and overtaking one institution after another. A few years ago, it was the Boy Scouts, even though the Boy Scouts had won in the Supreme Court.
Yep.
They, too, capitulated. And I think for the most part, what this has shown is that the activists really had more strength, or at least they intimidated people who didn't really agree, but they didn't want to fight them. And
right.
The media is the number one institution that did that, because every step of the way since Stonewall, and beginning with Stonewall, the media wrote about the gay movement more and more and more and more sympathetically. And when there would be a protest, for example, a sit-in at a talk show, they would disrupt talk shows, which is very rude. They would stand up and start disrupting a talk show. That's not a fair way to protest, but they would do it, and the media would reward them and said, hey, do you want to do an interview? And so the media also helped build this gay power machine and fuel this revolution, which is now taking over literally our whole society, including our libraries, where we have these misogynistic drag queens, homosexual men dressed in these gaudy costumes. They want to teach children, Janet. They want to teach toddlers. And you have liberals saying, yeah, they should be able to teach these youngsters who don't even know what sex is yet.
It's hard to even articulate on my part how upsetting it is to see the growing reality that these gay activists really want the children to be changed. And I think people are beginning to wake up to this a little more than I've seen in years, Peter, because we've had in the last several days, we've had, for example, these children's TV shows increasingly introducing gay characters. My Little Pony is going to have a same-sex couple. I mean, we're talking about horses here. What is the reason for this? We had the Arthur situation. We had, it's just more and more
it's
and
an
more.
Ideology.
Yep.
It's an ideology which demands acceptance. I mean, think about this. One of the acts of protest during Stonewall, back during the Stonewall, right when that happened, were two people of the same sex holding hands. And the more moderate gay movement leaders said, no, don't do that. That's too radical. Now we have Arthur, where the respected character, the teacher, gets in a homosexual marriage, that's in a kid's cartoon.
Yeah.
So this is a movement which, it's an ideology which is constantly demanding more and more, all in the name of these nice-sounding words, equality, acceptance, tolerance. Meanwhile, they have precious little tolerance for people who disagree. And we know that because we see what the cruelty they're doing to the ex-gay movement. They're lying. They're trying to ban therapists from even helping somebody. Even a child who was molested, a boy who was molested by a homosexual adult, they're banning reparative therapy, which would help him not to embrace a homosexual identity.
Yeah.
This is one of the most, if not the most, intolerant movement in America today, and hopefully it's not too late for the resistance to develop to push it back, because it's really out of control.
No, I agree with you there. And for those people who are listening, who are constantly asking, I know I get this question a lot, you probably do too, why are they targeting the kids? Wasn't that a zone that they understood 10 years ago when we were talking about alternative lifestyles, that they understood, no, we would never teach this to kids. That's inappropriate. Now it's kids, kids, kids. It's not just the TV shows. It's the curriculum, like you mentioned, in Illinois and California, other places, gay heroes. You have to learn about all the different genders. It's just gay propaganda nonstop. The drag queens. Why the kids? Peter, what is the real reason that now it's kids, kids, kids everywhere you look?
It comes back to one of the core lies and myths of this movement, which is born gay. I mean, I think, to put it simply, that's what it comes down to. You have this identity. It's, quote, who you are. We hear that all the time. And it's basically innate. Now, this is what the gay Christian movement essentially is saying, right?
Right.
This is God made me this way. Harry Knox, another homosexual activist. And God, if God made me this way, it would be a defiant act against God if I rejected my gay identity. That's Isaiah 5. What is it? Isaiah 5:20, good is evil and evil is good.
Yeah.
They're completely flipped the word of God. Instead of sin being something you resist, sin is your identity.
Yeah.
And if you resist it, that's a sin. And so it comes down to, if you're born that way, well, then we have to help these young boys and girls. 10% of them are going to be gay. Another lie. It's not 10%. But we have to help them grow into their gay or bi or trans or pansexual or insert your deviance here identity. So it's all about, now we have to reach the kids to help them develop into their gay identity. They flipped truth completely on its head.
Well, and even my own children have told me stories about kids they know, kids they've come across, and they said, kids are completely confused by all of this. You have all kinds of kids who say, oh, well, I'm non-binary, I'm transgender, you know, I'm sexually fluid. And my kids have said, Mom, these kids don't know which way is up. They're not that way. They're so confused.
Isn't that how kids have always been?
Of course.
We really go to teenagers. And consider this. The transgender activists are passing out binders so that trans girls, or maybe that would be, wait, these are girls who think they're boys or want to be men, they're wrapping themselves in binders to flatten their breasts. The liberals are embracing this in our culture. And my question is, where are the conservatives? Where are the Christians? Where are the Republicans now that we have the entire Democratic Party embracing gay radicalism and trans radicalism all the way out to the Equality Act, which we'll talk about, which is
yep.
the most radical gay legislation ever. Where is the resistance must rise up now, or else we will see freedom suffer in this
country. Oh, man, I think you've really said it all right there. Peter, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on Janet Mefford Today talking about the legacy of the Stonewall riots. We'll be back right after this.
From Arbella Studios comes Emmanuel, the untold true story of hope and forgiveness in the wake of the Charleston church shooting tragedy. A new documentary that examines the history of race relations in Charleston and the hope for healing that emerged out of a senseless act of terror.
That act of forgiving people is the greatest act of love that one could ever experience.
So I forgive you, my family forgive you.
Emmanuel, in theaters June 17th and 19th only. More information is available at emmanuelmovie.com.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
If you're a medical professional, here's a way to move from success to even greater significance. Mercy Ships has an urgent need for pediatric registered nurses. You'll be joining dozens of volunteer medical professionals who've been blessed by the opportunity.
I think all nurses should do something like this. To serve the unserved is one of the most beautiful experiences.
Get more information by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. Mercy Ships, bringing hope and healing to the world's forgotten poor.
We're back on Janet Mefford Today. Thanks for joining us. Peter LaBarbera is my guest, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. You can check him out at AmericansForTruth.com. Wonderful website, wonderful organization, and wonderful friend. One of my comrades on the God's Voice Conference, which took place at the end of February. And as we were talking about the Stonewall riots, Peter, and the gay rights movement and its evolution over these last 50 years, I noted a couple of days ago, Revoice 19 took place. This is the conference that we've been exposing over the last year or so. Revoice 19 took place. One of the homosexual men who attended Revoice tweeted out this. You're going to love this. Seeing parents bring their children to Revoice 19 has been a beautiful thing. And I said, boy, there you have it. And that's, I mean, this is a movement, obviously, Revoice, that is trying to promote LGBTQ plus Christianity and claim celibacy. But we all know eventually where that leads. The camel's nose under the tent ends up in the same place every time. How do we respond to all of this as Christians? Peter, what do you think the important movement is next for the church in regards to the so-called gay rights movement, as we see increasing pressure being put on churches, on Christian camps, Christian schools, and of course the Diabolical Equality Act, which passed the House. How do you see this all coming together, and what kind of advice would you give to Christians right now in terms of what we ought to be doing?
Okay, well, I would say personally and from a ministry perspective, I think we have to step away from anger, although there's a healthy anger, of course, at all the terrible things that are happening and we want to resist. But in terms of what I'm talking about, if you have friends, coworkers who are trapped in the homosexual lifestyle, embracing it, there's a godly sorrow. You need to pray for them. You need to reach out with them with the truth, because I think one of the fascinating realities of our current time is, despite the immense gay power that's out there, and it is huge, it's one of the most powerful movements in our culture, God is still saving people out of homosexuality.
Amen.
So you need to reach out with the truth and love. You have to love these people. They have bought a lie that their sin is their identity, and you need to help them see that there are many people like Stephen Black, like Greg Quinlan, who have walked away from this. Janet Boynes, who've left homosexuality behind, and they've repented of their sin. So from a personal standpoint, that's what you have to do. From a public policy and a cultural standpoint, I think we need to resist boldly. Enough of this namby-pamby, attitude of, poor pity me, we can't do anything, and those bad people get involved in politics. Look, in our culture, the way our culture is set up, the people who get involved the most and the boldest and the most aggressively win. And unfortunately, that has been the left. We need to encourage conservatives to say, if you call yourself conservative, you need to fight gay marriage. You need to fight this perversion of the school system, which is indoctrinating children in deviant identities. You need to stand and fight. You cannot acquiesce. I don't think gay conservatism is the answer, Janet, although I'm happy that some, you know, there are homosexuals who are rejecting part of the homosexual activist agenda. But the problem with gay conservatism is many of these same people, like Guy Benson, actually espouse gay Christianity. And so even the gay conservatives end up really attacking truth at its core, which is you don't embrace sin, you repent of it.
Amen. And a little leaven leavens the whole lump. That's the problem. Well, tell people, I know you will be in Washington, D.C. on the 26th, and I know you're taking a stand with a number of other wonderful Christian leaders. Can you tell me a little bit about what you have on tap on the 26th?
Yes, we are marking the fourth anniversary of the Obergefell decision, which Obergefell v. Hodges was the decision which the Supreme Court, in a decision written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, who was really a gay activist justice, imposed homosexual so-called marriage on the entire nation, despite the fact that 32 states had specifically embraced protections for traditional male-female marriage. So this is the Obergefell decision, June 26th. We're marking the fourth anniversary. We are going to be assembling directly in front of the Supreme Court at 10:30 on June 26th, which is a Wednesday, and we are speaking out boldly, and we are calling for the repeal of Obergefell, stop the Equality Act, which is this dangerous LGBTQ legislation, which has been signed onto by numerous big corporations, and of course the media is going to be promoting it, but we're saying no. Just like we oppose Roe v. Wade, we oppose Obergefell v. Hodges, and we must repeal this devastating decision which imposed counterfeit so-called marriage on the entire nation.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was a time, as we all know, where Joe Scheidler and people like him, he's a great pro-life activist out of Chicago, he was basically standing alone after the Roe v. Wade decision. And it took many, many decades for, first of all, evangelicals to jump on the pro-life bandwagon, as we should have at the very outset, Joe Scheidler being a Roman Catholic. But now the pro-life movement is a juggernaut. I mean, everybody is pro-life. Everybody is trumpeting their support for life, which is wonderful and fantastic. But I have been a little surprised to see the church being so blasé about fighting the homosexual rights activists, considering their incredible power and how they are deliberately going after Christians and trying to destroy Christians' lives. How do you explain that, Peter? I know we've kind of talked about that before, but what are your thoughts on the silence of the church when it comes? There are Christians, obviously, who've been concerned, but why aren't we seeing more, you know, famous pastors, big megachurch pastors, these sorts of folks standing up and really taking the lead and pushing back against this movement?
I think I'm sad to say that I think many have capitulated to the zeitgeist. They're either too apathetic or they're too fearful. And I think Christians, look, my attitude is if Pakistani Christians are losing their limbs and getting their churches burned down, I think we can withstand being called a bigot.
Right.
You, Janet?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, guys. This is the United States of America. Do you really believe that immoral behavior constitutes a civil right? And you have to understand, the Equality Act basically enshrines sexual and gender deviance as a civil right. That means we already see these lawsuits across the country based on state and local laws. Imagine if you have the bludgeon of the federal government to engage in lawsuits against people of faith who simply disagree with the idea that two dudes can get married, which is ridiculous in itself.
Yeah.
It's not a marriage before God.
No.
So I think, you know, the church needs to man up. And that means, and that's women too. Women.
No, man up.
As well.
I agree.
Not
man
in a transgender sense, in the bold sense. You know, get back to your Christian boldness.
Yeah.
Stand for truth and the love of Christ. Because if you don't, you will have the more hateful people take over. Christians should be most qualified to speak the truth in the love of Jesus Christ.
Now, here's the scary thing for me. When you consider the Equality Act, which would enshrine gender identity and sexual orientation as protected classes in federal law, which is a recipe for disaster, what would keep them from having to extend sexual orientation to a pedophile? I mean, this is what we have to start talking about. And people are beginning to put a toe in the water a little bit and saying, well, all this stuff with the kids and all this stuff, you know, we're looking at the sexual abuse. We're looking at the Catholic sexual abuse scandal where it's overwhelmingly man on young adolescent boys, not little boys, but adolescent and teen boys. And we're saying, are we going to begin to have to deal with this issue of children and homosexuality? And where is it headed next? What do you see ahead? Like what's the next frontier for this movement?
Well, I think the drag queens is a story hour is a big indicator. Here you have these men dressed as women who are promoting this in the name of tolerance. And of course, we've seen homosexual men and women describe their basically they were victims of predators, but they describe that as an important in the formation of their sexual identity. That's really sick if you think about it.
Yeah.
Justifying predation on yourself in terms of, well, it helped me discover my gayness.
Oh.
And so they planted those seeds, including Harry Hay did that, by the way, the man you talked about, Janet, the former communist Harry Hay. We've already seen that. And when you see children being taught about homosexuality, children who don't even know what sex is yet.
Well, I would say so. Yeah, to justify your predation or what was done to you, which was a violation of your innocence as a young child, it's just mind blowing. And you know, I just don't see it getting better in the near future. But I know the Lord can do anything. What about the Romans 1 angle where people are saying this is full blown judgment on our nation? We won't recover from this. This will be the end of our nation.
Well, I don't like to predict the end of the world because I'm not qualified. So I would have thought that the end of the world would have come when Hitler killed 6 million Jews and millions of others.
Right.
So I think we don't have that. I know it's a very dire age, but I still think we are accountable for holding up the truth and doing it wherever we can in whatever way we can, even if that means somehow reaching out to your gay coworker and saying, this is not the right way to live. There's a better way.
Right.
There are many acts of boldness, many acts of kindness and love and Christian truth engagement that we can do in whatever area we are at. Don't make excuses for yourself. That's a cop-out.
Well, well said, Peter. And I want you to check out AmericansForTruth.com, Peter LaBarbera's wonderful website for his group, Americans for Truth, about homosexuality. And again, 10:30 a.m. Eastern time on Wednesday, June 26th, Peter and company will be out in front in Washington, D.C., and standing against the Obergefell decision and calling for its repeal. And I wish I could be there, Peter, but I salute you for doing that, and we'll be checking in with you on that as well.
Yeah, people come. We need bodies. So if people come out and join us.
All right, that sounds good. Peter, thanks a lot for what you're doing, and thanks a lot for being here.
God bless you, Janet, for all you do.
God bless you, Peter LaBarbera. Everybody, thanks for being with us on Janet Mefford today. We'll see you next time. And don't forget Arbella Studios' film Emmanuel in theaters today only. More information is available at emmanuelmovie.com.